morning and welcome to Midpoint, your source for news and public affairs with a local perspective. I'm Shelley Reback, your host, and with me is Lamar Robinson and volunteers Jessica on the soundboard and Barbara, our volunteer taking your calls. Just remember that today's show and all our Midpoint shows are available for listening on demand at wmnf.org/midpoint. You can hear any show from our index by selecting the date from the drop-down menu. If you enjoy the show and appreciate what we are covering and how we do it here at Midpoint, please remember to leave us a donation in the tip jar, and please direct your donation to support MPW, Midpoint Wednesday, so we can keep independent, non-commercial media like WMNF and Midpoint on the air. Okay, we've got great guests and lots to cover today, so let's get started. Today's topic, censorship is on the rise. A bill backed by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis in the Florida Legislature's Senate Education Committee was approved, basically prohibiting public schools and private businesses from inflicting discomfort on white people during lessons or trainings about discrimination. It looks like it will easily be passed into law by the Republican majority. That bill, which DeSantis has dubbed the, quote, Stop Woke Law, seeks to censor the teaching of critical race theory in public schools and curb private businesses' diversity training programs, which the governor calls woke indoctrination. Already, schools are getting complaints that black history programs are teaching critical race theory. Spoiler alert, they aren't. Black history does not equal critical race theory, and all public school history curriculum is set by the state anyway. But if this passes, parents will be empowered to sue schools and teachers under this law if they feel woke indoctrination, whatever that is being taught. Florida lawmakers are also looking to tighten parents' grips on classroom discussions and materials when it comes to LGBTQ topics. The so-called, quote, don't say gay bills, which the governor has indicated he supports, would act as bans on all LGBTQ discussions in elementary and middle schools while encouraging parents to sue any schools or teachers that engage in these topics. Locally, Polk County isn't even waiting to see how all this new legislation shakes out. The county is already pulling books from its school shelves. As lawmakers discuss banning books that displease parents or that might make kids think or feel too much, and as they grandstand over restricting classroom conversations around race and queerness, Polk County has already removed 16 titles that do tackle race, LGBTQ issues, and other topics deemed controversial. A new group called County Citizens Defending Freedom, that's based in Maitland, Florida, wants to, quote, defend freedom and liberty and place local government back in the hands of the people, close quote. They successfully argued with Polk County School Library System that the 16 books violate Florida's obscenity law by containing detailed verbal descriptions or narrative accounts of sexual excitement or sexual conduct that is harmful to minors. Jason Geary, the spokesperson for Polk County Public Schools, told Bay News 9 that the books are not banned, they're merely unavailable, so a thorough, thoughtful review of their content can take place, but they aren't sure how long the review will last or what format it will follow. Among the books being reviewed are award-winning titles that tackle race, like Beloved and The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, and LGBTQ-themed books like George by Alex Gino and Two Boys Kissing by David Levithan. In fact, to the surprise of exactly no one, just as these new censorship laws are being debated, all of the banned books in Polk County seem to relate to either the Black American experience or to LGBTQ themes. One book that is not on that list and that has not been rendered unavailable in Polk County yet is The Giver by Lois Lowery. Lois Lowery is the author of more than 40 books for children and young adults. I invited Lois to join us today because The Giver is a book that, since its release in 1993, has been one of the most frequently assigned readings in middle school and one of the most controversial books in American schools. At times, The Giver has ranked 11th on the list of books most frequently requested for removal, according to the American Library Association's list of books most targeted for censorship. The Giver has also become one of the most influential novels of our time. It won the 1994 Newbery Medal for the most distinguished contributions to American literature for children. I am very pleased to welcome the author of The Giver and part-time Florida resident, Lois Lowery, to Midpoint today. So welcome, Lois Lowery.
Thank you. It's lovely to be with you.
Great. I'm also happy to have with us the book editor of the Tampa Bay Times, Colette Bancroft, who always has her finger on the pulse of the book world. Maybe Colette will tell us that the dystopian fiction section is now going to be merged into the nonfiction section of the bookshelf. We'll find out. Welcome, Colette. You with us?
It is. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here. It is getting harder to, you know, tell those two things apart.
Isn't it? If you listeners have questions or comments for me or my guests during the show, you may still call into the studio at 813-239-9663, email us at dj@wmnf.org, or text us at 813-433-0885. So thanks for both of you for being with us. I'm happy to have you here, Lois Lowery, to discuss your book, The Giver, in light of the current spate of censorship and surveillance legislation in Florida. It seems to me that your book, The Giver, has some similar themes. In The Giver, all history and memories of the past have been erased or tightly controlled, and people don't have strong emotions or feelings, not love, but also not regret or guilt. Language is also tightly controlled, and sameness is valued. Maybe you could please give us a brief synopsis of the story in The Giver and tell us whether you think that the themes that it addresses and the society it portrays has any parallel to the kind of society imagined in these new legislative proposals in Florida.
That's a lot of questions rolled into one.
Yes.
Let me give it a go. The question I'm most frequently asked is how I got the idea for this book so many years ago, 1992 probably, because it was published in 93. And let me just quickly explain that at that time, my father was an assisted living place in Virginia. He was very old. He lived to be 93. And during a visit, and I made frequent visits there, I suddenly realized by looking with him through a photograph album and coming across a picture of two little blonde girls, and my father looked at them and said, "Oh, there you are with your sister." And then he hesitated and he said, "I can't remember her name." And I said, "Her name was Helen, Dad. She was named for her grandmother." And he said, "Yes, Helen." And then he said, "Whatever happened to her?" And I had to say, "She died, Dad," because he had forgotten. And when I was driving my rental car back to the airport after that visit, I began to think, what would happen if we could find a drug or a shot or something that would manipulate human memory and obliterate the thoughts, the memories that would make us sad? My dad had been so happy looking at that picture, smiling at those little girls, until he said what happened to her and I had to tell him the truth. And as I thought that, what if we could do that for people, change their memories, obliterate their memories of anything that made them sad or scared, wouldn't that be a comfortable way to live? And so that was the origin of that book, The Giver, in which in some future time, unnamed time, a society, a community, I called them, had indeed, I didn't go into the science because I don't know what it might have been, but had found a way to manipulate human memory. It is a very comfortable way to live. And so I worked on seducing the reader into wanting to be in such a place.
Yeah, until you got a little further into the book.
Yes, yeah.
But isn't suppression of memory, isn't memory another way of thinking about history? Because, I mean, you know, there's personal memories, there's collective memories, there's institutional memories. All of this is around, related to the concept of history. And so, you know, the idea also that, you know, history is told by the victors, those kinds of things. If you manipulate history, then you really have the opportunity to manipulate society. And it seems to me that, you know, what I thought of when thinking about doing the show with you and about your book, The Giver, what I thought of was that when you suppress memories, it's similar to suppressing history. And some of the legislation that Florida seems to be interested in promulgating this year seems to want to suppress our history.
Well, of course, that's what's happening with the banning of books. Who I've forgotten who it was who said, Churchill perhaps, said history is simply a set of agreed upon lies.
Yeah.
But there is also the saying of the philosopher Santayana, who said, those who don't learn from history are condemned to repeat it. What if we don't allow people to learn from history? I mean, that's the specter that looms here as these books, such important books, many of them are removed and suppressed.
Yeah. And in your particular book, one of the biggest themes was that it was a community that it was devoid of anything that might make people uncomfortable. There was a complete sameness and any of the sort of frictions that we experience in society were smoothed out so that nobody would feel uncomfortable. And here we are in Florida right now looking at the passage of a law that seeks to make sure that nobody is going to be made to feel uncomfortable by the teaching of history. I find that really extraordinary, and particularly that your book, you know, was written in 1992 and published in 1993, and now here we are in 2022, where our political leaders feel that type of society, that type of community where everything is the same and nobody feels any discomfort from anything they learn about their history is desirable.
It's ironic, isn't it? And particularly because it's aimed now, as they go after schools and school libraries, at adolescents. And that particular time of life, as we all know, we who are sitting here and who have been adolescents and look back on that time, is a time of discomfort. That's what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
As we separate from our parents, as we learn to grow up and mature, we're going to encounter all kinds of discomfort. To hide that away is to suppress the process of maturation. It's a very dangerous thing to do.
Yeah, and not only are they trying to suppress history or control the dissemination of the content of the history that students receive, but there's also the idea that in your book of this drug that suppresses any kind of what you call stirrings, which really I think people read as a sexual awakening around the age of 12 or 13. And that also seems to be something that the Florida legislature is trying to inject itself into by these don't say gay laws. At this point, they're talking about restricting the ability of middle schoolers to have any discussions in school about any topics relating to gay or transgender issues or people. But that is also similar to that theme in your book of the drug that suppressed any sort of discussion.
Stirring.
Yeah, about stirring. And I found that ironic, too. Let me ask you, did you ever anticipate that your book would be censored at all, let alone so frequently? I mean, my son read your book in a public middle school in Tampa, Florida, in about 2008 or 2009. And I don't recall there being any sort of upheaval over that. That was, you know, the beginning of the Obama years. But what are some of the common complaints about your book that cause it to be removed from schools or censored so frequently?
Well, you mentioned one of them, the reference to stirrings, which was a very carefully written part of the book. I didn't describe sexual urges, but it's clear that that's the beginning of what that indicates. And the children in the book at that time, when they report, as they're required to report, their first stirrings then from then on take pills that suppress hormones. But so that's one of the things. But most often things are taken out of context, of course. Most often what is described when parents, outraged parents, come to the school board and say, I want this book removed, is exactly what you've talked about. This book distresses my child. It's too frightening. That's a tough one because of course it's frightening to realize the things that can happen. ironically, when the government becomes suppressive, as it has in that book.
Yep, and bad things happen to children too. so it is. It seems to me extraordinary that the Florida legislature, through the promulgation of laws, wants to prevent discomfort in the classroom. That just seems extraordinary to me.
Can I just mention a book that's coming to my mind, not by me, but it's a book set in Florida. And it's a book that my mother read to me when I was 9 years old and that changed my literate life because it was distressing. And it made me cry into my pillow. And that book was called The Yearling. Till that point, I had read Mary Poppins and The Secret Garden and all the traditional books of childhood. This book happened to have been published for adults, but my mother realized that it was a book that I would love, that I would identify with the child main character, which I did. But it was a book about real life and about the terrible things that can happen in real life. And I never looked back after reading that book, listening to my mother read it to me, and then reading it to myself as a child, because it so changed my view of the world and gave me a glimpse into things that I would face as I got older. And that's the purpose of many of the books that kids read today. It's growing up is a very lonely existence, even though they disguise that by traveling in groups and wearing the same clothes and speaking the same vernacular. But adolescents are very lonely, and they're facing a lot of stuff and making a lot of decisions. And the thing that alleviates or can alleviate the loneliness is the companionship of a book, a protagonist who faces the same things. And it's...
Uh-oh, I think you're frozen. Whoop, we just lost Lois Lowry. Let's see if we can get her back. But while we're waiting for that, I'm speaking to Lois Lowry, author of The Giver, for a book for middle readers, and she's also a part-time Florida resident, so she also has an interest in some of these laws that we've been talking about. I'm going to bring Colette Bancroft into the conversation, but what do you think, WMNF listeners? Do you think children's education and children's books need to be restricted as the legislature is proposing, as they're doing in Polk County? Are teachers indoctrinating our children, or are they simply teaching them? What should a teacher say when asked, why does Billy have two moms? What should that response be without skirting the law that has is being proposed that will prevent any sort of discussion in the classroom about gay people even? Let us know what you think by calling 813-239-9663, email to dj@wmnf.org, or text us at 813-433-0885. Do we have Colette? Colette, are you with us?
I'm here if you can hear me.
Yes, I'm glad to have you. So Colette Bancroft, book editor of the Tampa Bay Times, is with us. Can we get Lois Lowry back on too?
I'm on the phone now.
Okay. All right. So Colette Bancroft, here's my big question for you. Are we seeing an increase in censorship of children's books lately? And if so, is it because the books themselves are so much more provocative and aggressive in presenting concepts that challenge our more traditional notions of society and the family and identity? Or are books today not really much different, but parents maybe are being ginned up by some cynical political operatives to attack education and educators, which are a traditionally liberal Democratic power demographic, for political purposes. What do you think? Are the books so different, or is the political context so different?
I think it's a combination of both. I think there's been an increase, and I think it's a good thing, in diversity in books for young readers, in terms of subject matter and in terms of who writes those books, and that's a good thing. But I also think that this is part of a larger political trend toward these book bannings are part of a larger political trend. And we've seen book banning and book burning and all of those things before. And it comes out of a certain kind of political mindset. And, you know, when the founding fathers got together in the 1770s to, you know, overthrow the British and create a country founded in liberty, they didn't start out by banning books. So it's a it's the other kind or another kind of political movement. So I think it's a combination of both those things. We're in a, it's cycles.
Well, ironically, the group that is that brought the complaints to Polk County about these books is called County Citizens Defending Freedom. Mm-hmm. And they claim they follow a strict process when taking action to correct breaches of freedom and liberty. So it's ironic that you bring up the founding fathers. They say our process is based on the biblical model of Matthew 18:15-17. They claim to be the group also that wrote the anti-vaccination mandate in Florida, and they're offering legal help for religious exemption paperwork to help people that don't want to wear masks. And they have been partnering with some other extreme right-wing organizations like Turning Point USA and Liberty mm-hmm. Council and America's Future.
Yeah.
That's who the stakeholder is that brought this complaint to the Polk County School Library people.
Yeah, it's ironic that these groups that try to do this and parents who do this, we'll argue parents should have a say in what their children read. And I agree with that. And of course they should. But parents have a say in what their own children read. No parent has a right to tell other people's kids what to read.
And that's what that's the issue, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that in expressing this, desire to ban these books, they're trying to take away other people's rights, not just the rights of children to read those books, and that's tremendously important, but the rights of all those other parents to make their own decisions about what their children read.
Right.
So it's, it's ironic that they sort of cast it as some kind of
freedom thing. Yeah. I've got a lot of listener engagement here, so let me take a few calls and emails here. I have Bubba who says, wrong DeSantis wants to change out The Giver with his own book called The Taker. Just kidding. My daughter read The Giver in middle school, and it really got her thinking. Thanks for bringing her on WMNF. Okay, well, you're welcome, Bubba. And David says, it's not surprising that Dennis Baxley has his grubby hands all over the Don't Say Gay bill. He's always been a real conservative gadfly, and he's truly a narrow-minded dummy. I was thinking about A Last Babylon, a book by Pat Frank that I read in school about a post-nuclear bombed-out Florida. That book would probably be banned today by Baxley and his fascist minions for scaring kids. That's from David. And we've got, a long one. I'm going to have to take a few moments to give that some editing. But we've got Doug in Clearwater on the line. Doug, you're on the air. What do you want to say to our guests?
Yeah, no, thank you for taking my call. I'm going to be as concise as I can be.
Thank you.
Anybody that votes for DeSantis or Trump, you scare me. there was a movie, and I don't know if it's based on the book that you're talking about, The Giver. But it was a fabulous movie. And all I want to say is...
Oh, I think we lost you, Doug. I don't know, you dropped off. Sorry about that. Let me take a call from Josh in St. Pete. Josh, you're on the air.
Yeah, this is John in St. Pete.
John, sorry.
Yes. Okay, I wanted to say a few things. This is Nazism, what they're trying to do. You can't burn and, you know, and ban books anymore. This is a violation of freedom of speech. And after I get off the phone with you, I'm going to call Polk County School Board, and I want to protest having the Bible in schools. Because the Bible contains all kinds of violence, all kinds of sexual content, all kinds of different things that are offensive to a lot of people. So it's all in the context. So I want everybody to protest against these people. And
hold up, John. You know, sure. There's more going on than just the possibility of a protest. Just yesterday, the Polk County Superintendent of Schools announced that he would be forming a book review committee in Polk County. And this committee would be open to citizens. It would have various stakeholder representatives like people from the libraries, people from the NAACP. There would also be an opportunity for high school students with their parents' permission to be on the committee. And, you know, people from the community will be on the committee. I have to, and they're going to review these 16 books that have been pulled from Polk County. And although the process hasn't really been discussed about, you know, how that committee will meet or what they'll consider, they have basically warned everybody that it's going to be a big time commitment. It's like a Polk County book club, and they're going to take the opportunity to review those books. And I'm not really sure where it's going to go from there, but I do suspect that a number of people from County Citizens Defending Freedom are going to try and get on that committee. So, you know, if you have an interest contrary to theirs, I suggest that you explore the opportunity to get on that committee too. Yeah.
Talk is nice, but we need to sue these people for violation of rights and take every dime that they have. That's the way to fight these people, is sue them in court for damages if they're trying to violate the rights of people. It's ridiculous that you have to go and review every book.
Well, you know, the Constitution doesn't protect private citizens from acting to invade your First Amendment rights. It protects against the government doing that.
The government is controlling this. So the government has no right. That's what the First Amendment right is about. The government telling you what you can and cannot do. All this BS that DeSantis is doing about, you can't say gay people. How can a government tell you what you can or cannot say?
Well, Dennis Baxley was quoted yesterday as somebody asked him, what's a teacher supposed to do? What's a teacher supposed to say when they're asked a question like, you know, why does Billy have two moms or some question like that? And his response was, the teacher should say, go ask your mom. That was it. All right. Thank you, John, from St. Pete. Yeah. We appreciate you, and we appreciate you calling in and giving us your thoughts. I'm going to take a call from John in Port Richey. John in Port Richey, do you have a call or a question for my guests?
Well, first of all, I got a question because I want to kind of understand what this bill's about.
Yes.
Did you say that it allows private citizens to sue school districts or whatever if they find books or material objectionable? Is that?
Yeah, that's one of the things in the Stop Woke. That's the you know, it's HB 7 and House Bill 7 and Senate Bill 148, which is the so-called Stop Woke Act.
Okay, and so it's kind of like what they did in Texas with the abortion.
Exactly. Very much like that. They're setting up a bunch of vigilante citizens to be in a position to sue school boards or school systems and teachers over content.
The other question I had was about the First Amendment, which I caught the end of that, which that kind of answered that question a little bit. But so what I think is what needs to be done is we need to turn this on its ear. So if I find a book that is teaching something about capitalism, I should say, that's objectionable to me, and you should remove that book.
Well, you know, let's be real. The reason that these private rights of action are being put into law is not really because somebody believes that these are going to be successful cases against teachers or the school system. It's basically to bankrupt school systems to chill teachers teaching in the classroom, to chill the content that they want to present to their students. It's basically to put the public school systems into chaos, to make them more dysfunctional, so that in the end, Florida can basically take the resources, tax dollars that they now devote to public education and move more and more of it into private education, into charter schools and religious schools.
I can see that. So you're saying that they're not really planning on passing these, or if they get these passed, they'll be challenged in court and be struck down. But in the meantime, it's just going to throw the school districts into chaos.
Well, that's my opinion. I mean, you may have a different opinion.
I don't really know. I'm trying to figure this out. But I would say that if these laws do get passed, I think everybody should just challenge this. Like if they teach a conservative principle, people should challenge that just to show how ridiculous this whole thing is. And once again, the problem I think is Democrats are playing like it's like you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. And I think that's what the Democrats are doing. They're bringing a knife to a gunfight. The Republicans have the gun and we're trying to do it like, oh, you know, it's constitutional. This is.
Right.
Throw it back at them. If they want to do this to
well, that's just going to cause more chaos in the system, which feeds into their goals. But I hear what you're saying, and I thank you for your call, John, from Port Richey. Thanks a lot for calling in. I've got an email from Jane who says, banning books can sometimes backfire. The graphic novel Mouse by Art Spiegelman was banned by the McMinn County, Tennessee School District, and following the ban, sales of the book skyrocketed to some 735% last month. And she says, my source is Forbes magazine. Thank you, Jane from St. Pete, about that. Let me talk to Lois Lowry about that. Lois, did you find that after your book was censored, that sales of your book increased, that more and more people were interested in reading it?
I'm guessing that happened, though I have to confess that I don't follow sales the way the publishers do. Of course, that's their concern. But of course, when a book is banned or held up for a possible banning, kids are interested in it. And so I think that does happen. Kids will go out and find and read the books that are being talked about.
Sure. It's an attractive nuisance, if you will. If you're not supposed to read, I mean, those are the books that, you know, I snuck out of my mom's closet when I was in middle school to read, the books that she had hidden.
I hid that one not under my mattress, but I hid that one from my mother so she wouldn't know I was reading it. It was so controversial. It was published when I was 14.
Which one?
And now The Catcher in the Rye.
Oh, yeah, The Catcher in the Rye, right. Let me ask Colette. Colette, you're the editor, the book editor of the Tampa Bay Times. And Lois Lowry's book, The Giver, won the Newbery Medal for the most distinguished children's literature. Now, Colette, you've been a judge for the National Book Critics Circle Award. And now we have heard that Polk County is starting these giant, book review committees to review these 16 books that have been banned in Polk County schools. Let me ask you, what do book judges look at when they make these judgments about the quality of the work? Do you think this committee has the qualifications or the aptitude to be able to make the same kind of judgments that these book judges that give out awards like the Newbery Medal have? Do they look at how well the book reflects the current social atmosphere when they're published? Or are the award-winning books, the distinguished works, supposed to be more, I don't know, timeless?
I've never been on a school review committee, so I don't know exactly how they operate. But given the decisions that these kinds of groups often make, I don't think literary quality is at the top of their list.
Okay.
I think, or you know, whether some, you know, if their goal was to find works of classic literature that are profound and beautiful and heartbreaking, but also can be life-changing, nobody would be questioning Beloved. But almost everybody is.
Yeah. All right. Well, so, Randy.
It's a very different set of criteria, I think.
Yeah.
I think they're looking at these books for social and political content. And book judges, in my experience, are looking at those things, but they're looking at literary quality and originality, and you know, and they're very divergent sets of standards, I think.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me that the sole rationale that the Jason Geary from the school system in Polk County put forward for pulling these books, the sole rationale was that there was an allegation from this, what he called stakeholder group, which we now know is this group called County Citizens Defending Freedom, this radical right-wing Bible-based group. The sole rationale that he gave for pulling those books was that citizens group had made an allegation that the books violated the Florida obscenity laws. And the Florida obscenity laws are enforced by the state attorneys in the various counties. And what's interesting to me is that rather than seek an opinion from the state attorney's office as to whether any of these books violated the obscenity law in Florida, which would be the normal process, that's exactly what the state attorney is elected to do, is to enforce the criminal laws of the state of Florida. So if indeed there were laws violated, the state attorney should be the one to make that judgment, not a bunch of citizens, in my opinion, who have no authority to make that judgment on the legality of the content or whether the content is obscene. There's a very strict legal test for obscenity that a jury would have to find is met in order to convict someone for disseminating obscene material to children. And so they have completely bypassed the normal process for making a determination about whether or not these books violate the criminal laws, the obscenity laws of the state of Florida. And they've put this judgment in the hands of people who are not law enforcement, and who, as Colette mentions, may not have the same kind of standards, may not be reviewing the books with the same kind of standards that, you know, book reviewers or award givers would review them with. So that's something that concerns me. But in any event, I mean, what would happen if the state attorney looked at those books and said, nope, I don't see any obscenity in any of these books? Polk County, then what would they do? Keep them or say, well, we're going to ban them anyway? I think it would, you know, really throw a monkey wrench into things. But in any event, let me take a call from Ryan. Ryan in Riverview, you're on the air.
Hi, Shelley. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to hear your voice. Also, I just wanted to say that I love those books. I've read all of them at least once, if not twice. And I did most of that reading in my ages between 12 and 15, right alongside the characters in the book. And those books, they taught me a lot. But also now looking back on those books as a parent, it's taught me the more important lesson that it's not my job to inflict my opinion about the world on my child, my children, or my community. It's my job to reflect what the world is, the truth of the world, and help my child learn from there and make their own decisions and opinions and become their own person.
Well, let me ask you, Ryan, as a parent, would you find any of these books objectionable for your, let's say, middle school age child to read?
Absolutely not. And in fact, early high school age? I would encourage more teachers to use it in their syllabus, you know, for throughout the year, especially in, you know, English literacy.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Let me also say that the objectionist over in Polk County, you know, their favorite book, God through Adam and Eve out of the perfect paradise for touching the tree of, you know, the knowledge of good and evil, right?
Right.
It's, you know, that's their whole deal. Why, you know, and more or less, that's a lot of what the core meat of the book surrounds itself upon, is why is the knowledge of good and evil in and of itself a dangerous thing to pass down to our children without our own views on it?
Right.
You know, and just say, and just simply say, yes, this happened. And yes, we're trying to learn from it.
Well, thank you, Ryan. Thank you for your comments. I appreciate that. And I want to direct my question to Lois Lowry about something that Ryan said. So, you know, Florida wants to tell teachers they should teach the Holocaust, they should teach about American slavery, but they should teach without any sort of painful words and images that might cause kids discomfort. So I want to ask you, Lois Lowry, author of The Giver. You're an author for middle school readers, and some of your books, like The Giver, deal with difficult topics, like euthanasia is in your book in a very veiled way, but it's there, and kids figure it out. So let me ask you, how do you write about difficult topics in an age-appropriate way? And what does the idea of age-appropriate even mean in the context of these horrible historical events in which children did, in fact, suffer?
Well, you know, a good example of the way I go about these things is another book of mine called Number the Stars, which is typically used in fourth and fifth grade classes throughout not only this country but throughout the world. And it deals with the Holocaust. But it deals with the country of Denmark, who in 1943 saved their Jewish population by hiding them when they were scheduled to be taken to extermination camps. So it does not include any of the atrocities. Knowing that I'm writing for a particular age group, in this case 10, 11, 12, I am very aware of that when I'm writing. And so I would consciously have not included in a book about the Holocaust the atrocities that kids will have to learn later on. Most states mandate Holocaust education. In Germany, incidentally, today, high school kids throughout Germany are required to visit one of those camps as part of their history. Germany has to deal with their own terrible history, and they're doing it very, very well.
Right. Now, can you imagine here in the United States where there's such intense criticism over the way that slavery is taught, the way that the Black American experience is taught, there's such intense criticism of it, that Florida has seen fit to ban the teaching of critical race theory, which isn't even taught below the college level anyway. But they've sought to ban it because they're so concerned that white people might be made to feel discomfort from...
As they should, in my opinion.
You mean as they should feel discomfort, right? Not as they should pass those kind of laws? Is that what you mean?
As they should feel discomfort about our own history, and not just slavery, but our treatment of Native Americans.
Of course.
Took their lands away from them in the earlier history of this country. All of these things are part of what make us who we are, and we have to acknowledge that, and we have to present it to children in ways appropriate for their age, I think. And publishers are aware of that. Writers are aware of that. None of us set out to damage children or trouble them. But we set out to be honest with them, and I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, can you imagine, though, someone of German descent in the United States complaining because teaching the Holocaust would make German people feel discomfort? I mean, it's so ironic to me. Randy from Palm Harbor sent us an email saying the censorship by Governor DeSantis seems similar to Germany circa 1933. You know, it really... I don't know. I think Randy's right. It really does.
1933 is when I think it was 34 different cities in Germany on a particular date in 1933 held public book burnings. And they were celebrated with bands playing and people applauding. And this was early in the regime of Hitler. And we all know what that led to. We should be very frightened by seeing what's happening now in this country and seeing the parallels.
Yeah. Let me take a call from Steve in Tampa, who's been very patient. Steve, you're on the air. Are you with us?
Hi, yeah. Can you hear me all
Yes,
right?
We can hear you fine.
Yeah, very quickly, great show, great guest. A pleasure to hear from. My kids are at the Giver in middle school, and we talked about it. What a pleasure. Real quickly, you know, on the, you know, let me state my biases at the outset. I can't wait until they ban the books, because I'm going to go out and buy several copies of each and make them available to, you know, all the middle school students that I used to work with. I taught middle school for 4 years recently until the pandemic. What we see here, I think, is just another example in Florida of the dog whistle du jour. If you listen to Sean Hannity and Jesse Waters, you know, they're not the only folks, but if you listen to them, and you really ought to, you know, you can get a sense a few months in advance of what the kind of drunken frat boy pile on the issue will be in Florida next. And this is just another example of that. And of course we all get spooled up, but, you know, history teaches us that as soon as you put a bullseye on a concept or a book or a people, you know, you're just resisting the long, long run of history.
That's the Streisand effect, isn't it? As soon as you try to suppress something, it becomes even more popular or even more publicized.
Yeah, I don't know. You say it's Streisand effect?
Yeah, yeah. Look it up. Google it. It's okay. Like Barbara Streisand. That's the cultural concept now. The Streisand effect.
Yeah. I want to
point out that something earlier in what you said about buying the books for all the middle schoolers that you know. Apparently, there's a alternative move afoot for a number of parents who object to these book bannings to start book clubs. Banned book clubs where they're going to have their kids read these books precisely because they do appreciate the value in these books. Colette, I wonder if you've been following that, these banned
book clubs. I've heard actually about students forming those book clubs. And I've also heard about, in several different places, groups of parents who oppose these kinds of bans, forming their own groups to write to their school boards or their schools to say, we support these books. We want our children to read these books. And in some cases, the group supporting the books has very much outnumbered the group that wants to ban the books. And those parents should have as much say as the other ones.
Well, so hopefully those parents will join the Polk County Book Review Committee. It's possible that they'll do that. Let me take a call quickly from Fran in Largo. I noticed we don't have any Polk County people calling in today, I'm sorry to say. Fran
they're busy
in Largo,
reading.
You're on the
they're
air.
They're busy reading.
Yeah, they're busy reading.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
I'm just going to back up with the people that spoke before me. It makes me think about years ago when prohibition was tried in this country, and the rebellion against that was so big, and finally they had to turn around and get rid of prohibition. That's how we are in this country. When something is banned or kept away from us, we want it more, and we want... Talk about freedom. We really do want our freedom to choose things we want. And it's great to hear that there's book clubs being formed and things like that. It's like the speakeasies and all of that stuff that they had during the 1920s. I say that's the best thing, keeping things away from people. It just makes them want it more. And especially things like books. I mean, that's just that's the worst thing I have ever heard of a prohibition on is on learning and knowledge. It's just you can't keep it away from people. You cannot keep the truth away from people. That's what I wanted to say.
Well, thank you for your comments, Fran. I appreciate it. We have an email from Doug in Clearwater who says, it's funny how the state legislature allows school districts to do what they want with restraining books, but it won't let them control development or other local concerns. Yeah, that is funny, Doug. You know, we have such an issue in Florida with the Republican state legislature wanting to remove local control from anything. That they banned mask mandates in the schools. They even, you know, banned our city of Tampa tree ordinance because they are hell-bent on making sure that the state legislature pretty much has control over everything. But here it is. They're letting local school boards make these very significant decisions about curriculum and book banning. So I have another email from Bob in West Melbourne who says, Polk County has books? Who knew? Thank you, Bob, and no offense intended to Polk County residents, at least not from me. We also have an email from Lou in Ybor City. Hi, Shelley and guests. The don't say gay law could criminalize LGBT student groups that have a teacher advisor. Any thoughts? Yeah, Lou, I think take a look at that law. And also, I know that Equality Florida has a one-page outline of what is in that Stop Woke law and the Don't Say Gay laws. And I believe that they have made some exception for these LGBT and ally groups that the schools have. But, you know, the session isn't over. We have, I think, another week, and things could change. So I think it's important to keep up with what they're doing, because sometimes things sneak in or sneak out at the end. And so I would advise you to keep track of these legislative actions before the session ends. And of course, contact your legislature if you have thoughts about them one way or another. That's the best thing to do. All right. So I want to just, before we end, I want to thank both of my guests today. Lois Lowry, who's the author of The Giver, and some 40 other books for children and young adults, and Colette Bancroft, the book editor of the Tampa Bay Times, for being with us on Midpoint today. Can I ask either of you, is there anything you want to say very quickly before we have to end?
I'll just say, this is Lois, I'll just say, let us hope that wisdom and sanity prevail in Florida, which deserves better than it's getting right now.
All right, thank you. And you are a part-time Florida resident, so you have an interest in these issues and these laws. Thank you very much for being with us.
And I'll just say, several people brought this up too, but this could backfire on the people who are trying to do it, because there really is no better way to get a kid to read a book than to tell her she can't.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Thanks to Lamar Robinson and to Jessica for running our sound, and our volunteer Barbara for answering our phones. Let me remind you that this and all of our Midpoint shows are available on our Midpoint page on the WMNF.org website. Next week, Midpoint will be fundraising the 14th through the 21st. And if you've enjoyed getting riled up and indignant with me every Wednesday as we try to understand some more of the outrageous things our political leaders are often doing to endanger our democracy, or if you appreciate discovering the brave and forthright things other political leaders are trying to do to protect it, then please make a generous donation to keep WMNF and Midpoint, your listener-supported, independent, non-commercial news and public affairs show, on the air. Just hit the tip jar PR at WMNF.org/midpoint, and be sure to direct your donation to MPW Midpoint Wednesday. We'd certainly appreciate your support. Now, stay tuned for Duncan Strauss and Talking Animals. We are WMNF Tampa.